Oh no! Another Lutheran dirge and other myths.
Pastor Will Whedon, Director of Worship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, talking about this year's hymn sing at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
We'll be doing some myth busting during our hymn sing. Double dare anyone to participate and walk away thinking Lutherans sing dirges. From God's Own Child to Lord Thee I Love. From Dear Christians One and All Rejoice to In Thee Is Gladness. Oh yeah. Lots of joy bursting out in song all over the place. And so sorry, not a dirge in sight. Real Lutheran church music.
Join Pastor Will Whedon and Issues Etc. listeners from around the world for a hymn sing at our one and only Making the Case conference in 2019. Making the Case is Friday, June 7th and Saturday, June 8th on the campus of Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more about the premier conference for Christian laity at issuesetc.org. We have all heard these excuses. Maybe you've even made a few of these yourself. Having children, that's irresponsible nowadays, given the overpopulation of the world. Or maybe this one, I need to focus on establishing my career. I don't have time for children now. Maybe I'm not even ready. I'm not even grown up enough to have children yet. Or I wouldn't want to subject a child to the world today. It's too violent. It's too divided. Whatever adjective you want to put in there. Or maybe having children is irresponsible environmentally. I've heard that one a lot lately. A lot of reasons not to have children. Are there any good reasons to have them nowadays? Welcome back to Issues Etc. on this Tuesday afternoon. We're going to talk about raising children and the golden rule. Matthew Cochran joins us. He's a software engineer, holds a master's degree from Concordia Theological Seminary. He's author of the blog, The 96th Thesis, and a recent column for The Federalist titled, You're Not Following the Golden Rule If You're Not Having Children. Matt, welcome back.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Why do you think that of all the things the Bible teaches, the golden rule still manages to garner near universal acceptance?
Well, I think there are really two reasons for that. There's a positive reason, there's kind of a cynical reason. The positive one is that the golden rule is just basic natural law. C.S. Lewis pointed that out in Mere Christianity, that the golden rule isn't even specifically Christian. I mean, you can find very, very similar rules in other religions and other cultures. It's intuitive. It appeals to our empathy. You know, we want to be treated another way. We want to treat other people that same way. It appeals to our self-interest because we want other people to be following the golden rule with respect to us. So it's just a very intuitive, very natural way of thinking for us. It's just a basic part of the law that God has written on our heart. And there's also the kind of the cynical answer that the rule itself, if you take it out of its context, the rule itself does not make any specific demands itself. It's a summary. You know, when you read the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus gives all sorts of different instructions, and then toward the end summarizes that by ending all things, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. But if you just take the verse out of context, strip it away from, you know, everything else in the Bible, it's a lot easier to make it say whatever you want. So it's kind of the positive reason. It's a good, just good empathetic rule of thumb for dealing with one another. But if you don't want it to, it doesn't step on your toes too much at the same time. I think that's why it's still with us so strongly.
You say that intentionally deciding not to have children is the Platonic ideal of selfishness. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's kind of similar to what Paul instructs in the New Testament when he writes when they're talking about providing for widows and whatnot. You know, he says, and if somebody refuses to provide for their own family, they've denied the faith and are worse than an unbeliever. It's kind of a similar thing when it comes to having children, that, you know, taking care of our families is our most important earthly vocation, you know, bar none. And every civilization realizes that. Even unbelievers realize that, yeah, you're supposed to love your kids. You're supposed to take care of them. It's just another piece of natural law. And having kids of our own, it's a very important part of that, because, you know, when we're growing up, when we're children, our families are kind of ground zero for when we're learning to love one another. That's where we receive our first vocations, first things that we're called to do, to love one another and take care of them. With these specific people that God puts into our lives that we don't get to choose. You know, we don't get to choose who our mom is or who our dad is or who our brothers or sisters are. They're the ones that we need to find ways to love, that we need to find ways to care for, that we need to find ways to sacrificially give ourselves for. So so we grow up, we learn to love, we receive all that love from our own parents. And then when we grow up and we have families of our own, that torch passes on to us. We're taking all that love that we've received, all the blessings that our parents have given us, and then we're passing that along to a new generation so they start learning to love as well. And so in having children, generation after generation, you have this kind of ongoing cycle of self-giving love that's just continuing over and over again with more and more people until somebody refuses to participate in that cycle by passing that love along to another generation. When you make that deliberate choice to stop the cycle in its tracks because you think that having children would be too big of an interference with your own life, that you're going to take all that love from all those generations that came before you and essentially hoard it for your own enjoyment, but not give it on to anybody else. And that's kind of the height of selfishness, in my opinion, in those circumstances. It's the most fundamental responsibility that we have as human beings for most people. And if you don't even fulfill that basic responsibility, your own flesh and blood, bone of your bone, flesh of your flesh, your own children, then you're not even really clearing the first hurdle when it comes to generosity and sacrificial love.
You say that objections that are often raised to having children that focus, or we might even say shift the focus on things like barrenness, infertility, celibacy, etc. They're examples of what about ism. What do you mean by that?
It's essentially an attempt to self-justify. It's a very popular one these days. Basically, trying to find a way in which the law does not apply to you. If you can come up with, say, oh, well, what about this? What about that? If you're barren, or if you're called to celibacy, like the Apostle Paul, of course, none of those entail refusing to have children. None of those entail refusing God's gift to family. Because, I mean, if you're barren, you can't produce family of your own. If you're called to celibacy, God has commanded you to do something other than that. So it's in neither of those cases is there a refusal. But what people like to do is say, well, what about this? What about that? And pile up enough exceptions that they themselves can kind of hide in those exceptions, even if they never listed a specific one that applied to them. It's just like, well, if there's enough exceptions, maybe I can find one for myself as well. It's very much like when the fellow asks Jesus about the law, and he says, you need to love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. You know, do this and you will live. And then he responds, yes, but who is my neighbor? It's very much the same thing. Just an attempt to get away from the point of the rule, the point of the law, the point of what we're talking about, just to try to justify yourself.
So what do you think accounts for Americans' failure to have children in most cases, laying aside those cases where someone's not refusing the gift of family, they simply are either unable, or in the case of the celibate, they have chosen that gift of God for their lives. What accounts for most Americans' failure to have kids?
I think it essentially comes down to our culture having a hatred for children just as such. I remember back when I was in high school, we you go through health class and they, teach you all about the reproductive system and about safe sex and all of that stuff. And back then, I remember pregnancy was treated essentially just like another STD. That, here's how you avoid AIDS, here's how you avoid pregnancy, and here are the consequences of herpes, here are the consequences of pregnancy, and this is why you don't want it. And most of those consequences that they listed were along the lines of, well, you're not going to have time to go out with your friends if you're taking care of a child. You're going to have to get a responsible job, and you're not going to be able to rock and roll and party all night, etc. And the thing is, none of that really changes. Whether you're in high school or not, whether you're it's a planned pregnancy or an unplanned pregnancy, you do have to sacrificially love your children. You have to give things up for them. And we've reached a point in our culture where that idea of giving up something of ourselves has become so foreign that we see it almost as dangerous, that children aren't the point of life, that they aren't something that we should strive for, something that we should aspire to have, but an interference in what life is really all about, which is more along the lines of our own amusements, our own hobbies, our careers, all these sorts of things. The big delay in having kids in our culture, the reason we're not having so many, it's definitely not infertility. I mean, there is growing infertility, but it does not account for the huge drop in our birth rates. And it's certainly not celibacy. Just look around at the culture. You know, the people who are refusing to have kids are not being celibate for the most part. It all comes down to what do we want out of life? And after the past couple generations, most of us have not learned how to want children out of life. And so we focus on ourselves instead.
So I would like you to respond to some of the following reasons that people give for not having children. Some of them are more or less credible. Let's just begin with one that we've heard before. There are too many people in the world. Having children is irresponsible given the world's overpopulation. How do you respond?
That's one of those complaints that's been made for a surprisingly long time. If you look at the apology for the Oxford Confession, so 500 years ago almost, when that was written, and when they're arguing about enforced celibacy for the priesthood, Lutherans point out that that God commands us, you know, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. That's, you know, the first thing he tells us back in Genesis. And Rome's response back then to that was that, well, that doesn't apply anymore because the earth is already full. I mean, there's so many people here that it's producing population pressure. And of course, that's a claim that's being made at a time when there's less than 500 million people on the entire planet. And now, of course, 500 years later, there's, you know, more than an order of magnitude more people than then. And people are still making the same claim. They've made the claim all along. And you never know for sure how are you going to feed all these other people until you get more people and then you figure out how to feed them, because every new person who's born is another mouth to feed. But they also have two hands with which to work. And those with hope, those who persevere, those with ingenuity, those are the people who provide the means for providing for all these other people. That's the food supply is not static. It's we make more food as we have more people, and it's always been that way, and it's going to continue to be that way. The only thing that the Malthusians among us have ever produced is just bad predictions about what the upper limit of the Earth's population is.
Matthew Cochran is our guest. He's author of a recent column for The Federalist titled, "You're Not Following the Golden Rule If You're Not Having Children." When we come back, another objection: I need to establish my career before I start a family. Nicholas von Amsdorf was the only nobleman in Luther's inner circle, yet few people today have ever heard of him. Learn more about one of the first evangelical bishops in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April, Nicholas von Amsdorf, champion of Martin Luther's Reformation. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040 and request the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Nicholas von Amsdorf.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans in their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armedforces.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Are you a high school guy or girl interested in theology and thinking about becoming a pastor or deaconess? Christ Academy High School at Concordia Theological Seminary is the thing for you. Spend 2 weeks worshiping and learning like a seminary student while having fun and building lasting friendships. Join us this summer at Christ Academy from June 16th to the 29th. Visit ctsfw.edu/ca for more info.
Memoria Press now offers 8 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for children with special needs. These full-year packages help you teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art and music, poetry, science, history, Latin, classical and Christian studies in incremental and multisensory ways for mastery. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR9 to save on resources for your home or school.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about raising children and the golden rule. Matthew Cochran is our guest. Matthew, here's another objection I'd like your response to, and that is, look, I'm not ready to have kids now because I need time to establish myself and my career.
Well, there's two ways to take that. If it's your career in the sense that, oh, I want a career, I find it fulfilling, and that's what I really want out of life, well, then we're back to the selfishness thing because you're focusing on yourself and your own personal satisfaction rather than, you know, passing on along those opportunities to a new generation. But a lot of people frame that more along the lines of, I need to focus on my career because I am providing so much value to the world that my career is important and that I am doing great things for people. And if I have kids, well, then I won't be able to do as many great things. And there's a couple problems with that, but the main one is that, yes, you know, if you have children, you do have less time to commit to your career, especially if you're the primary caregiver, which is usually the mother in most families. But I mean, one of the things about having families is that you have two parents and that, you know, one can focus on breadwinning and the other can focus on childcare and play to each other's strengths. So if you're the primary caregiver, mother or father, then yeah, you cannot commit as much time to your career. You have a higher premium on flexibility. You know, you can't do as much overtime. And there's going to be more instances where you have to tell your employees or your bosses that, no, I simply cannot do this right now because my family needs me. So there is a delay in career. But it doesn't last forever because, you know, kids grow up. As they get older, they need less constant care. And, you know, as they go out and start lives on their own, well, then there's even more time with which, yeah, you can go and do a career then. You can still pursue that. And the thing people forget about is that, you know what, your kids are going to have careers too. The kids that you have are going to go on and they're going to make their own contributions to this world. And say you lose out on half the hours of your adult life to child caring. And that's how much you lose off of your career. Well, if you have one child and that child does the same thing, and they spend half of their adult life on their career, well, that is up to 100%. You've broken even after only a single child. And if you have more children, you're getting all of these additional contributions to society and to the world that never would have been made if those children had not been born in the first place.
Here's another one, and that is perhaps even more personal. Someone says, look, I'm just not ready. I'm barely out of childhood myself. I'm not ready to have children yet. Or in essence, I'm not mature enough yet to be a parent.
I don't want to give an absolute answer on this one because sometimes you are too immature to be a parent, but it's a really easy mistake to make on this because the fact of the matter is you are never ready to have children until you have children. I mean, I was one of these selfish people, okay? I refused to have kids for most of my adult life for a lot of the reasons I've already discussed. I was being selfish about it. So I had my first child at 34, and I was not ready to have my first child at 34. But you know what? I figured it out. Because you have to figure it out. There is no way to really prepare to be a parent. You can prepare in the sense that I need to get ready and make sure that I can provide materially for my children. That can give them food and shelter and clothing and that sort of thing. I can provide for my children that I am getting married and I'm going to give them a mother. I'm going to give them a father. Make sure that they have both parents in their lives. There are ways you can prepare in those ways. But as far as just the day-to-day, well, what do I do when he falls down and bumps his head? Or what do I do if he's crying and he won't stop? You don't know. You do not know that until you actually start parenting. And once you do, once you have these little people, your own flesh and blood that you've created with their own personalities who you're getting to know, who are growing on you, and you're building these relationships with them, you figure it out. You become ready to have children by having children in most respects. And that's the case for most responsibilities in this world. We learn on the job a lot of the times. We don't know what we're going to do until the situation is on us and we have to figure out, okay, what are we going to do? And we solve it because we have to solve it. And when you have kids, yeah, you love them and you need to solve it and you do the best you can. And every parent makes missteps. Every parent has situations that they handle badly or that they weren't ready for. But broadly speaking, you're never going to be comfortable in that, yes, I've got this, and I know how to cover every eventuality that comes in here until you actually have kids and you start figuring out how to take care of those eventualities.
What about this one? And this kind of may seem a little archaic because of its kind of was common more in the 60s and 70s when people thought that the world was coming to an imminent end. I wouldn't want to subject my child to the world today. It's such a terrible place.
Every age has its own reasons for thinking that the world is a terrible place. You know, something is always wrong, and sometimes in places are worse than others. And certainly today, you know, here in America, we're dealing with some fairly bizarre challenges that most other cultures haven't really had to deal with. But, you know, on the other hand, we have huge advantages. You know, we have things like that we don't have to worry about, you know, when it comes to food, for example. We have a lot more options for food and for simply wealth and medicine and well-being that most other people who have ever lived just haven't had access to. So every time and place has its own challenges where it's, oh, it would be terrible if a child were to grow up in a place like this. But, you know, we're all living in a place like this. And the fact that most of us have not taken our own lives suggests that, you know what, we do find value. Even in a place like this, we find value in living our lives here. We want to continue them. So we give our kids that same opportunity to want to continue to live even in this world, even though with all the problems that we have. What it comes down to is the difference between hope and despair. If you say, oh, there's no point to going on, there's no point to living, there's no point in humanity continuing, and I just want to stop the ball right here, that's despair. Hope is, you know what, I'm going to work hard to make this world a better place. I'm going to work hard to carve out a place where my family can live in safety, where they can have what they need, and that we're going to find ways to overcome these challenges that we're facing in our society and make it so that, you know, future generations don't have to deal with the same problems. There's always going to be some problem that we have to deal with. There's always going to be some reasons that, you know, I wish I didn't have to deal with this. But the difference between dealing with it and not dealing with it, it just goes back to hope versus despair. Hope is something that we have through faith in God. Despair is just giving up. It's giving up that faith.
You point out that excuse is a claim to be doing some kind of noble service for children you will never have. That's kind of an odd claim to make. I mean, I could say that of, you know, look at all the children's lives I've spared by not having them.
Well, yeah, people look at what they're doing for the world. We're doing favors for people. You know, instead of having kids, I'm doing all these other good things for the world. Or possibly I'm sparing my kids the horror of existing in the first place. But what I mean there is that it's not so much a matter of being noble. It's more a matter of being selfish. These are, when we're talking about these reasons for not having kids, for most people, these come down to excuses rather than reasons. Because most people, they don't sit there growing up thinking, you know, oh, I can't wait till I can have a family of my own one day, and I want to have a house full of kids, and it's just going to be awesome. But then they find out that, oh, there's a whole lot of people in the world, and they say, okay, well, I'm going to forego my dreams and not have kids. If that's your experience, you're going to adopt. That's what people who believe that but still want family do. They adopt. Most people, what they end up doing is they realize, you know, I don't really want to have kids. And then they start finding the reasons to justify that decision. They're rationalizations, they're excuses rather than the real reasons that we're not having children.
Finally, the objection is often raised, having children is irresponsible environmentally. And this is often made from progressives, that it's harmful to the environment to have kids.
Well, there are two lines of thought with that. If it's a matter of there being too many humans on the world, that goes back to overpopulation, like we already talked about. If, on the other hand, you're saying it's not a matter of having too many humans, but simply a matter of having humans at all, well, that's a really anti-human view to be taking, that humans are themselves, simply for existing, bad for the environment. It's certainly not a Christian attitude when looking at creation, where God has created this world for us, that he you know, gave us dominion over it and told us to subdue it and be fruitful and multiply within it. The problem there isn't so much with children as it is just with humanity in general.
So why is it important for us to consider what our parents gave up and gave to us, and in fact, even take it back a generation, our grandparents before them?
Well, we have to remember, and it's really especially important to remember when Mother's Day and Father's Day roll around, is that, you know, we have all these reasons we don't really want kids. They're crying, and, you know, they keep us up at night, or we don't like the idea of changing diapers, or we don't know how we're going to overcome some of these challenges that we have, or, you know, we're going to have to spend money on our kids instead of ourselves. All these different reasons that we have, or it's like, we don't feel like having children. We don't really want to have children. It would be too big of an interference. Well, the thing to remember is that, well, you're here, you have parents who had children, and they made exactly those same sacrifices for you. They gave up what they had. They spent a lot of their money on you instead of themselves. They gave up a lot of their freedoms for you instead of for themselves. They gave up so much of their time and resources that they put into you because they loved you. And so, yeah, your parents sacrificed you. They endured everything on that list of yours of reasons that you don't really want to have kids. They endured all of that for your sake so that you could be here listening to Issues, Etc. right now and enjoying life. And indeed, you're enjoying life so much that you don't even want to give up any of your time to a family of your own. But your parents did that for you. And their parents did that for them. And so on and so forth. So on, all down the line, back to Adam and Eve, who every generation you have people just loving, sacrificially giving of themselves, all resulting in you being here today, generation after generation, thousands of years of people loving and giving up of themselves so that you can be here. And so if all of these people have done this for you, what does it mean then if you're going to stop it right there and say, no, I'm going to take all of that love, these thousands of years of love, and I'm just going to keep it for myself so that I can live the life I want to live and not pass it along, not pay it forward to the next generation.
Matthew Cochran is a software engineer. He holds a Master's of Arts degree from Concordia Theological Seminary, and he's author of the blog, The 96 Thesis, and a recent column for The Federalist titled, You're Not Following the Golden Rule If You're Not Having Children. You can read The 96 Thesis, and you can read his article under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Matthew, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chicago is the home of the one and only 2019 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 7th and Saturday, June 8th. And if you're a baseball fan, you could wrap up your weekend after the conference on Sunday by watching one of the greatest baseball rivalries, St. Louis Cardinals against the Chicago Cubs at Wrigley Field. Learn more at issuesetc.org or give us a call, 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 7th and 8th at Concordia University, Chicago. Pastor Paul McCain joins us on the other side of the break to continue our series on the Lutheran Confessions. We're in Luther's Small Catechism. We'll be wrapping up our discussion of baptism, talking about the power and the significance of baptism.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois is happy to support the Christ-centered, cross-focused ministry of Issues Etc. Join us for worship, Bible classes, youth ministry, and other opportunities to grow in Christ. We have a Christian day school for children in preschool to eighth grade. We are located at 1300 Beltline Road. Call us at 618-344-3151 or visit www.goodshepherdcollinsville.org.
Nadia Bolz Weber calls for a sexual reformation in her latest book, Shameless. How does her reformation compare with the truths rediscovered during the 16th century Reformation? I've written a review of Shameless in the latest Issues Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button on the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Pastor Andrew Abraham details his journey from Catholic priest to Lutheran pastor. The free online Issues Etc. journal.